Hey, everybody, welcome to 372 Pages We'll Never Get Back. This is Grouse Shoeshiner. Connor Lastoca, that's a name I haven't heard in a long time. Yeah, I'm now called Grouse Shoeshiner, thanks to a Willowverse name generator that was sent in to us by a listener whose name I have already forgotten. I will look that up and credit her in the comments. But joining me as always is, let me hit generate one more time, is Horn Babysitter. Horn, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Oddly, my family never did babysit, so the name, I don't know where it came from.
Oh, they assigned it to you at Angwin Island when you immigrated there.
When I came into the port, yes, that's right.
I saw someone they were posting that was a complete myth in the same realm as, you know, I don't know, other things that people all think are true. I don't know.
I think it's true. Peter Tork's mom from the Monkees. No, Mike Nesmith's yes. mom from the Monkees. Whiteout. Yeah. Invented Whiteout.
Peter Tork's mom was kicked out of a bake sale for using a semi-sweet. Instead of semi-sweet, she used just baking chocolate in her chocolate chip cookies. And that was not that big a deal, but...
Honor ear, yes.
So this is Horn and Grouse in the morning here on 372 Pages We'll Never Get Back, the podcast where we read books we do not expect to like. That is bearing out with our current book, Shadow Moon, written by George Lucas and Chris Claremont. It is the sequel to Willow.
Yep. The sequel.
And it sucks. But there is still a lot to discuss in it. We have some actual plot points, some that could be deemed even relatively exciting. But before we do that, we've got some business to take care of. We're going to have all our normal departments as usual. We've got fanfic or real coming up. This one's proving somewhat difficult. We've got some tricky ones today. We have two brand new middle school games that people's school's principals had to get on the PA and tell them not to do, continuing our streak of having those. We've had Gaddafi-ing, we've had Sevi-bopping, and we've had scooping. So we're eager to see what people wrote in to tell us about this time. And we've got some new fan art of our favorite new mascot, the Llamacorn, who was in someone's used book last week, a listener named Matt Nelson, who draws a very funny webcomic and series of comic books called Catbeard the Pirate, has drawn the Llamacorn. So if you were looking for a New Year's tattoo, this could be your new thing.
That is excellent. I think by far the most fascinating character in the book was drawn on by a reader.
Even though it's only in one copy of the book, yes.
That's right, yeah. Before we get to that, and we have so much business, but I have a quick quiz for you, and this will just take a moment.
Okay.
I think you'll do okay on this. I just want to do, it's simple, lightning round, caps or lowercase?
Oh, God.
For terms.
Okay. Simple, yeah. Okay.
Insight.
Caps, camel case.
Leather and oilskin.
Lowercase.
Soul eater.
Caps.
House birth.
Lowercase.
Tinker's dam.
lowercase.
Dark realms.
Uppercase.
Mind speak.
Mind speak?
Mind speak.
Caps.
King's gate.
Caps.
Snow sleep.
lowercase.
Towering headlands.
Lowercase.
House colors.
Lowercase.
Wow, very good. There's a couple more, but you get the point. But,
yeah, I sure do.
You only missed, I think, snow sleep you said was lowercase.
Yeah, oh, really?
It's uppercase.
I should have gone with what we were both comparing that one to, I'm sure, the Odin sleep.
Yes, that's obviously right. What it's meant to evoke there, but nicely done. Yeah,
seemingly at random. The only ones you know that I knew for sure were the ones we've talked about. Mage sight, I ad nauseum, but yeah.
So we have mage sight, insight, outsight, and mind speak. And Mindspeak might be coming up. I think someone alerted me to that. Okay. I'm not. I can't remember whether it's in this reading or not, but it's a real thing. These were all real. So.
That list you just rattled off reminds me of the whole time it's been reminding me of this segment from a 90s DJ Shadow song, if we could just get that dropped in right now.
Insight, foresight, more sight. The clock on the wall reads a quarter past midnight.
Yeah, so that was from Introducing, which I think came out in 1995. That could have been directly inspired by Shadow Moon from 1 year earlier.
I'm almost certain it was.
And we have one more piece of business. It fits in very nicely with the George Lucas connection to this book. We have a new Star Wars movie coming out in a matter of days, weeks, right?
And it's the final one, right? There will be no more Star Wars movies?
They've decided that the artistic integrity of the franchise is worth GDP of 2/3 of the planet they could earn from this one alone. Yes.
Yes, right.
I think this is the rise of Skywalker, and you are – there's a chance you might be going to see it in the theater.
Yeah, before – Dave Berge, who is going to be mentioned here, approached me. There was a 0% chance. And now I think the chance is you know, pretty – it's looking good.
So, yeah, Dave Berge has found a cause to rebuild a church or a community center that is helping. They do a lot of great stuff, food pantries and vocational training and stuff like that, but they have to revamp their entire building. So he's thinking if you can raise $1,000 to support, it's called ACE in the City's Center of Belonging.
Yep. It's in the basement of a 100-year-old church. It is this big space, and right now there's just folding chairs down there, and there's going to be this great, just sort of a community-based, aid and assistance for those less fortunate that will take over the whole space. But we need to raise some money, so that's what Dave is doing. So
$1,000.
I'm going to watch Star Wars, and if somebody ponies up enough, I will watch it with them.
Yeah. So if you get $1,000, but it looks like it's well on the way too. We'll put links here and everything. You'll go see it. Have you ever seen a Star Wars in the theater?
I did. That was under duress. Kevin Murphy made me see one.
Wow.
And years ago, he wrote a book, and I went to see, I think it was
one of the prequels. Wow.
And there was cosplay everywhere, and people were really excited, and it was the loudest movie I'd ever been at, and I think I shut down, and I just went to sleep. So I don't really remember the experience, but I did go.
Well, if you get $1,000, you will go see it. That's going to hit. If you give $500 or more, you will be invited to come see it with you, which would be an amazing experience, I would think. If they raise over $5,000 for this, you will put on a costume and go see it in the theater.
That is correct. And my first ever cosplay, I will be doing that Star Wars.
So it says tasteful. So, I mean, that rules out any of the many nude scenes. It rules out that one Topps trading card where it looks like C-3PO is incredibly well endowed.
Right.
But so are you thinking Jack Tono Porkins, Kit Fisto, Wootini guy?
Who's the guy who is the little anti-Semitic guy who flies on little wings?
Hey, you're going to be Watto.
Give you a good deal.
Hey, this popcorn is too expensive. Why don't you give me a better deal on the snack?
Okay.
Is that Watto?
Yes, Watto.
Watto.
He might have I believe, a still photo of Willow, Warwick Davis, who is, I guess, just sort of one of the guys that hangs around with Watto. And he rolls bones, I think, actually. That's how Anakin won a pod racer from him.
Wait, what? Really?
Yeah. We have an email about this later, but there's all sorts of – there's more rumors about the Willowverse and garbage. All right. Well, that's fun. We'll put the link in the description. People, make it happen. Make him wear a costume. Make him dress as – make him dress as Watto and, get canceled.
Oh, no. All right. Well, thank you for that. And I don't know. Just dive in.
Let's dive in. Yep. We left off at chapter 2, so we're picking things up with chapter 3, which, in my opinion, started with a sentence that can go straight to fantasy sentence hell. It said, "In all the world, so Garen told Thorne with pardonable pride, there was no city finer than Anguin." And that was for me, almost tossed the book across the room moment, because it takes a lot to gear up for reading this one, And just to really does. To be hit really with that does. Right out of the gate is...
yeah, stiff-armed right away. And it doesn't get any better. I think the second sentence is, and I guess this is for people who don't know what a bay is, and... off the sunset ocean, you pass through King's Gate between a pair of towering headlands and into a bay that many considered a small sea in its own right. I would like to know who the people are who don't know right. the difference between a small sea, but whatever.
Yeah, it's a great
arguing
detail.
About bodies of water immediately and describing how bodies of water work.
Well, yeah, that provided the first moment of drama in the book as far as I was concerned. I mean, it says, for me, it says, three great rivers made their terminus here, one above the gate, the others below, allowing easy access to virtually the entire continent west of the Spinal Range. And I pretty much, like, gasped out loud when I read that because I was like, my God, what about all the silting? What I mean, what are they going to do? And but fortunately, Lucmont went on to say, and because of the depth of the water within the bay, there was no problem with the silting.
Oh, I had precisely the exact same note.
It was just, it was a moment of levity there, like world building, I guess, is what they call that.
It did put me in mind of something. I did read a book once about the Icelandic Cod Wars.
Oh, yeah. It's
a little more exciting than you might think.
Was it the book Cod by Mark Zerlansky?
It may have been. I did read that one. I don't know if this okay. detail was in that.
The fact that it might not be is
I've read more
is
than
truly
one
stunning
book on the Cod Wars. No, but isn't it a fact? Well, you've been there. So that able-bodied people for many years in Iceland would just go out into the water and scoop the silt out so that the bay didn't clog up.
Oh, it was like a community. It was it was like your responsibility, essentially. It was the
It's like the Israelis. You have to put some time in the service. Uh-huh. This is I think it was compelled silt digging. So it just put me in mind of that. So that was pretty thrilling.
So Iceland people read this and they're just like, you smug Nerwins, you go. You don't know how good you have it.
I'm up to my ass in silt here.
Icelandics and their Al Pacino voices. Right. He does not dial it down in The Irishman, that's for sure, if you haven't spent the day required to see that.
Oh, really? Does he go full Pacino?
It's incredible. I don't think I'd recommend the movie, but if you like Pacino impressions of Pacino, I got to recommend it.
I would just, again, point, this is a comparison. I think maybe Bill Corbett first brought this up to me. Remember... And of course, we all do. Godfather 2. Mm-hmm. Remember how restrained he was? Think of him like barely moving his features and just commanding this.
Right. Says now, more with one eyebrow raised than you could in a...
Yeah, now the arms are fully spread wide. Oh. And he's,
bug-eyed, yeah.
He's got a big eye!
It's incredible.
Weird transformation. Anyway.
We get just a few more details of world building that confused me. They're talking about... You know, the kingdom of Anguin, I guess, it's sending some, I don't know. But it says that there is like a wild land, and it emphasizes that the folk there, parentheses, none of them human, liked their privacy and had very little interest in the affairs of the Daikini who come across the way. So I didn't, are the Daikini human? Are the Nelwins human? Like, it appears they might be, but I mean, or just they aren't human either in the woods?
I can't keep track of this.
Okay.
I don't know.
Just checking.
I don't know. I do know. Here's a question about the species and their roles. Who's our second here? Who's his buddy? Garen?
Garen, yeah.
So Garen tells the Wur to dock the boat, like whatever. Oh, here it is. He didn't anchor for the night either, but instead trusted the Wurn to act as pilots and keep the boat safe from grounding. So these people, these furry people with the freshly lacquered hair,
right,
raising their children, making sure their boats don't run aground. Like, what's in it for them? What are they?
I don't know.
I don't understand. Are they sort of indentured servants to these people, or what's happening
here? It says that they can live as well on land as in sea, so I don't know why they're sort of confined to the sea, because the one word that we meet, in fact, seems very resentful and suspicious of everybody that he encounters.
But they also, the other species, the Garen species, can, by casting a spelling charm or whatever can just dive into the water and live under the water, remember?
Right.
So I just want to know what's happening in
why,
the world.
Why do we need two when you've made them virtually identical?
Right.
Another great detail, you know, we've got silting, we've got bays that may be perceived as oceans, but in terms of just like rich fantasy world building, I thought this was a great description. The evening breeze set the boat to creaking and groaning, reminding Thorne of the little grunts and groans an old man makes trying to settle himself comfortably to bed for the night. You know, just
I said challenge right away.
Oh boy! Oh, that wasn't normal. Oh,
let me just move this. Sometimes I bring my ship and a bottle of equipment into bed. Gotta put it over on this side of the. Oh God, this knee is oh, how cold is it? Because this thing only goes up.
So yeah, the so boat sounded like that. Great,
right? And the river gurgled alongside, but we no description of. You know,
what it was like.
Of an old man trying to cop a squat or something like that. You know, it's just, we're just left to our own on that one.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Well, we get some brief reminiscing about his dead friends, Mad Mardigan and Sorsha, and also about his family, who I also believe are dead. I'm pretty sure.
I just, the conversation with the captain and all of, I didn't know what was going on. I once again threw up my hands, so...
Well, yeah. So once we get on from there, we get more introduction about the Wur, which has the Lucasian name of Rin Taximanian, which I don't know. That sounds like someone you might be dressing up as if you get $5,000. But it was important to note that these things are just covered in the sleek, oily fur, and important to note that he wears no clothes other than a messenger bag style satchel. So that's just important as you go forward, nude except for the sort of Timbuktu bag.
It's slung casually off his shoulder and across his body, but it doesn't say where it, you know, where's the actual satchel landing on
right.
the body.
Yeah. And, you know, you'd hope that he's doing sort of like a, you know, when you had to get off the bus as a, you know, sixth grader, but you had something to be embarrassed about, so you like held your backpack in front of you. So hopefully that's what he's doing with his satchel.
Right, right. He's he certainly carries himself with the ease of a trained distance swimmer, which I confess I cannot immediately summon in my mind.
Right. In the water, I can picture that, but just, you know, what a trained distance swimmer would, you know, look like making a toast at a wedding or, you know, negotiating for a used car. I'm not positive.
I think you could be 6-7 years into a deep friendship with somebody before you even... And then suddenly, like, oh, did I never told you. I'm a trained distance swimmer. Like, okay.
So that's why you're always, like, leaving the bar early because you have to wake up early in the morning. That makes a lot of sense.
And carrying yourself with such ease. It was right there in front of me, and I didn't see it.
When you say, I'm going to the gym to swim some laps, I say, okay, great. See you in 45 minutes. And you're, like, more like 2.5 hours, and I never put two and two together. This was also good. Thorne mutters about, I believe, the train distance swimming Wern. The grace of a cat, muttered Thorne, not without some admiration, and twice the self-possession. Makes me want to kill him some while, Morag noted in partial agreement. Good with crew, good with cargo, well worth his wages. I don't know how those two square with each other, but, she sometimes wants to kill him, but he's also well worth his wages and good with everybody and the cargo.
I didn't understand that. I don't know what's going on there. I guess that's just, you know, I have a friend who I had to tell him he would make jokes while I was with him to like waiters and things. Mm-hmm. I brought this guy up before, but they're not jokes. He would say things like, do you serve walnuts here? He'd be like, I mean, we might have some in back. Just bring me the shells. Ooh. You know, stuff like that. And then they would stare at him like, why do you want them? And then he would go, I'm just kidding.
Oh my God.
I go, that That's not a joke. You have to phrase it in the form of a joke, or you have to smile so they at least know I'm winding you up. But yeah, he would just do these deadpan things, and I had I had to have that talk with him. Like, no, not humor, yeah, not humor.
You're not,
it does not work.
You don't want to make a server think that they've like accidentally been dosed with something and that they've forgotten how social interactions work.
Yeah. Anyway, that's maybe what this guy's about. Just flat insults meant to be jokes or something, or good-natured. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And then we sort of get a flashback of the night before the cataclysm, where the High Angwin, the High Nelwyn.
High Alduin.
High, geez. Okay.
And I admit it. You had to look it up, didn't you?
What that was?
Yeah, who he was.
He
was mentioned earlier.
Well, yeah, I just remember him because Billy Barty played him in the movie, who's also in UHF. So,
oh, so the High Alduin does come from the... Oh, see, I didn't even know that.
Mm.
I looked him up and just he was referenced before, but yeah. So he's like he's the Gandalf-y guy coming to tell him how to be a wizard or
yep,
something?
He's the only guy else that could do magic, and he wanted to be his apprentice.
Hmm. All right. Well, here's a fact. This was more world building. He couldn't move either, just sat upright on the side of his bed with eyes wide and face twisted into a monster mask like the kind the children made for trick-or-treat hauntings. So,
yep.
That is good to know.
All Hallows Eve.
Trick-or-treat hauntings. So we have the same holidays on this other, in this completely foreign culture.
Right. So are they manufacturing candy, or is it just they're in the hell realm where all people do is hand out apples, popcorn balls, and a bunch of pennies wrapped up in tinfoil?
Mary Jane's, I would add to
okay,
that.
Okay, right. This is our one candy. Damn it. And I also appreciated that, that's describing Willow when he wakes up, aware that the cataclysm has happened. But Monster Mask, not to be confused with Monster Mash, Mask is spelled M-A-S-Q-U-E. And later in this section we read, they use the same term again down in the dungeon, and it's Monster M-A-S-K. So I'm not sure where I don't know where that difference comes from.
But it's, a mask is a dance. Is it referring at all? Are they doing a dance, the Monster Mash, but it's the Monster Mask?
If that was the case, that might redeem the book here. But it says his face twisted into a monster mask.
Like the children. It's not a dance.
No. then we, so in the High Alduin was asking him, he was essentially like, are you, content to stay here as a farmer? He says farmer or wizard, or do you... you have greatness within you. Are you going to embrace it and, go out in the world as a wizard? Like that.
Yeah,
it
was like throwing down the gauntlet,
yeah,
right?
Red
like,
pill, blue on. Pill in the Matrix type of thing. Exactly.
He's chopping wood again. He wants him to come back for one more one more thing. But he asks him, because then he describes the dream or whatever. And so High Alduin says, they represent the greatest of powers, dragons do, the quintessence of all that is magic. To see one, that's either the greatest of blessings or of curses. I have to go, Thorin said. Which, that is how I would react in that situation.
Yes.
Obviously, all of us would. I'm sure he's looking at his watch or he's pulled out his phone meeting time.
I had my high school reunion this weekend. There was several encounters I had with people where they pretty much pulled that.
With you?
Or at least I did with them. But yeah, I ran into a couple people this weekend that I was like, oh, right, that person probably doesn't like me.
Well, because that situation seems so familiar, and it did seem like one of those, I got to duck out of this uncomfortable social situation, I went dive into the dark web.
Ooh.
And I found the expanded universe.
All right. So it weighs in on, monster masks, monster mashes, silt, all that stuff?
No.
Oh.
No. This is just what happens when... some old man starts gassing off these dragon bullshit at you.
All right.
What happens? And let's play it. I think you'll, it just expands on this moment and makes it a little bigger. So here we go.
Sounds good.
They represent the greatest of powers, dragons do, the quintessence of all that is magi. To see one, that's either the greatest of blessings or of curses.
I have to go.
What? But I am your spirit mentor. If you had to go, I would see it all with my outside.
Yeah, well, my cousin, you don't know him, has an outside blocking or whatever, and I have to go meet him for lunch because his mom, my aunt, is very sick, so...
Your cousin possesseth the blocking? What be his name?
You don't know him. He's from, like, Kiskani or whatever.
Long did I dwell among the Kaskani.
Oh.
Is he from Clan Bratanis U?
No. Well, maybe.
Look, I know you have to go, but if I could get 2 minutes of your time to talk about the cataclysm.
Wish I could, but I'm going to drop a brownie into your vest pocket and you can give him all the details.
Perfect. Say, are you going north? I could use a ride.
Headed south!
No, that's cool too. I could just hang with you until we came across a division of Thunder Riders.
The Alduin, please stop. You're just embarrassing yourself.
I'm embarrassing myself? You're wearing a mouse skull and diamond cufflinks.
I possess a rapier wit, sir, and I'll not bandy about with a dimwit such as yourself.
You are literally the size of a spoon. How dare you insult me? I'm a wizard or something. No, you...
Yeah. Well, I mean, seems true to life to me.
Yeah, it's a... it's very reminiscent, of conversations that... I also have Lauren's Christmas party tonight. I imagine there might be some of those as well.
Yeah. What is your go-to on that?
I need another drink.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know... Pour it, guzzle it if you still have one. But, it was a situation where people were perfectly fine. But just saying, I'm going to go talk to this person now, to me always seems so phony. But, you have to let it go.
Yeah. It's funny that this comes up. The same person who makes jokes like I was talking about, he would throw parties and he invited sort of all levels of his family and friends. So it was quite a mix. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I don't mind that. Except he would set up chairs in a circle. And so it wasn't just you're wandering around with a drink. And as soon as, Uncle Barney traps you in a corner, you can go, I'm going to get some crab dip.
Right.
You were just sitting there. And so, and everybody's looking at everybody else's uncomfortable conversation. And there's no escape.
Yep. That's where
and
you have to.
It is bizarre.
Fake diarrhea or something.
Yeah.
Jeez.
You have to do the faulty tower, my leg injury, and just fall on the floor. Just go big with it. But yeah, anyway, good to go back to the dark web.
Yeah, I appreciate that they do explore these moments out there. It is honorable that they do it when the book is as bad as this. You don't want to tell anyone they're wasting your life, but dark web people, man, pick a better hobby.
Yeah, and I assume we didn't go into it again, but I'm still having the same trouble just sort of following this thing.
Oh, man.
Is that universal, or did I just sort of check out in chapter one?
Universal. Then... Everyone has said the same thing. And part of the reason this is going to – I realize this time is that it doesn't have anything to indicate that something has changed in the book. Like, for example, in this flashback or whatever, it flashes back and then it ends with them sort of dropping Willow and Gurren off in this in Angwin, like the port. But there's no divvies of the paragraphs. There's no spaces. There's no asterisk. The chapters are so long that even that would help you sort of arrive at the conclusion that something had transpired or the setting had changed. It's just, but it doesn't. It just goes right into it.
Yeah, that it is very dispiriting to see blocks of text. I mean, we all know this from emails. Oh boy, he emailed me again. Oh, break up these paragraphs, man.
Yeah. So
this thing is just an unending stream of, the kind of crap that you're hearing right now. But yeah, you're right. It doesn't ever, and there's certainly no, when the levity comes, and I'm, heavy scare quotes on that, you only realize it after the fact, that was supposed to be the sort of relief from that was the breaking up of everything, but it doesn't, I mean, especially, and we'll get to it, the going into the dungeon or whatever, I think there's supposed to be a lot of it in there.
Of levity?
I think
yeah.
so.
But also, yeah, also fear. But yeah, it's not. And it makes me feel dumb, you know, because like you don't want, you don't, I don't need it to be like USA Today where there's a bright, shiny chart every other paragraph. But like it does help to have some sort of just better way to read this.
Yeah, it's a slog. It's it's somebody brings you on a hike and you know, you think it's the small loop and it's like, no, we turned at that place. We're doing the 5.5 mile loop
right.
uphill.
Yes.
Like, damn it.
I was
just
not
expectation
prepared.
Management.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so that flashback ends with an actual honest to God, tell my wife I love her moment. That's sort of has been a stock riff for us for a while when someone dies or something that we've even had to like put twists on it as we go on. But right. He said, he essentially like, you know, the high Aldwyn says, you know, you have no place here. His words had the force of ritual pronouncement, his mien, that of a magistrate passing sentence. And the longer you tarry, the greater the danger to all you hold dear. Tell them I love them, Lauren Thorne said as he took the belt. So we've had the name I haven't heard in many years and a tell my wife I love her all in the same first 100 pages.
That is a cliche bingo. Somebody cried out at that
yes.
when that came up.
Well, then, yeah, so they get dropped off at the port and they very quickly meet or witness a band of Thunder Riders coming past.
Oh, Thunder Riders? Do you mean the Mazin?
Yes. This is, has this happened before? I feel like it's happened in a book or in something we've watched where they say, oh, it's this thing, also known as this thing.
This one infuriated me. These people, they don't really have a huge part in it, I think. But yeah, they gave them two names without any explanation. This was diving into, you know, Wiki Willow or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And to find this out, that Thunder Riders and Mazin
are
the same.
Yeah, I mean, I figure they might be what's depicted on the paperback cover.
Oh.
Okay. But you know, who cares? And yeah, it just is once you start using them interchangeably, it starts to bother me. But hey, they're doing that with the main character's name, so like, whatever.
I'm going to give everyone an example now because I just found it. The sentences that make me kind of tired.
Okay.
This is just an example. The walls of Tir Aslean were not just stone, and its defenders weren't armed only with wood and steel. The king had a clutch of household sorcerers, led by Finn Raziel. There were amulets and wards galore for the structure itself and for every person within. The Vale folk did their part as well. I don't know. It just makes me right. Go back here. Are they going to be important? Is Finn Raziel going to be important? Do I have to know that there's a clutch of household sorcerers?
Yeah, especially
when
it's
supposed to be the spice that keeps me reading. It's not doing its job.
Right, because it's all, you know, fantasy 101 stuff. Oh, really? The Tower and Mystics had a bunch of amulets lying around? Well, that's only been in every movie I've ever seen on this topic.
Right. Right.
God.
Well, the only time I got excited was the description of carnival food.
Oh God, yes. They have gotten on board. There was off board. There was an encounter with the eagles. The eagles don't like the Thunder Riders because they wear eagle feathers.
Oh right, right. Yeah, he has kind of a long conversation with the eagle.
Oh my God.
We were talking about how, you know, they weren't developed characters. And then the eagles come in and I'm like, get him the hell out of here. I hate these guys already.
Right.
He gasses off for like two paragraphs about why they hate them.
The eagles hate them because they kill eagles and wear their feathers. So I don't know if like every animal just loathes every human. You'd think that would be the way it goes. But the eagles take off to go recuperate because they're getting pretty steamed. And they get on off board and then they see, a carnival with all sorts of carnival food available.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I took a sip of carnival drink there. I was washing it down. Here it is. Thorne had to chuckle and decided to gamble on some roast meat from a vendor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at a carnival, we're all doing that.
Right.
But thank you for a trial taste confirmed his nose's assessment. It was fresh, soaked in a deliciously spiced marinade. I like when my meat is soaked. And then coated with a peanut dipping sauce. Washed down with lemonade so strong it made his cheeks pucker. Garen preferred a half mug of ale and promptly made a face.
Yeah, Garen is a either Garen or the server is a beer snob because they start debating, you know, whether this is a West Coast IPA or a New England style hazy IPA right off the bat.
Right. Which, come on, we've been accused of being beer snobs with our jokes about, you know, Bud American Ale
right.
or whatever.
Well, so. I'm a beer snob. Like, that doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean that I have to make my characters in my fantasy novel into beer snobs.
That's very true.
I like this description.
I'm glad to hear that you do have a fantasy novel. Oh, I look forward to reading it.
But this was a further description of the place they've wound up. Everywhere Thorn turned, someone was hawking souvenirs, banners and pennants, commemorative mugs, shirts emblazoned with silk-screened sayings and sigils, most notably one ascribed to the sacred princess Elora, gewgaws of every size and shape and description. And, I guess if they say write what you know, there is nothing that George Lucas knows better than crap with characters' faces on it being thrust in your face at every turn you go.
I saw the word gewgaws, by the way, and immediately thought of you reading it, and I just saw your rage.
It's coming up. It's coming up, but I found some stuff on the dark web, and I reached out to the guy who made it, and the word gewgaws turned up in it, and the guy admitted, yeah, he was like, I had a lot of trouble when I was recording this weird fanfic thing. Like, gewgaws was something that I had to go back and record maybe four or five times because it is not a word I'd ever said out loud. It's none that I've rarely encountered on print. And when you're not expecting that to come up in a sentence, it can trip you up.
Tchotchke and gewgaw, is that are they synonymous?
I would guess. Tchotchke seems to come up a lot, but that was what Chad and Dale had a cooler full of, right? Or that was knickknacks, but...
Oh, knickknacks, tchotchkes, gewgaws. I feel like gewgaws are more functional but I don't know.
Let's see what the first image search result is for a gewgaw.
Is a gewgaw interchangeable in business classes with a widget, maybe? I don't know.
It appears to be also a name for the jaw harp or Jew's harp, like that wind, like the thing in the back of Give It Away.
The thing that I believe Snoopy plays.
Oh, yeah.
The Peanuts.
Uh-huh. Yeah, where he's, yep. That's, I think, the one where they go to France.
Oh, okay.
I think. Anyway. You can write in and tell us if that's wrong, too, because I have already been corrected on a reference from last episode. That's coming up in the emails as well.
Ooh, I love corrections.
Yep. We also get, what else do we get? We get a... Lengthy backstory about Gerwin's grandfather, which I was...
Oh, God. Move on, man. Yeah, that one. Wow, was that hard to read.
So he served in the kingdom's Lion Guard, and when Gerwin's father didn't want to be in the Lion Guard, he essentially gave an I had no son. They then... If you didn't pick up on it, which I admit I didn't, they go on to point out the parallel between Willow, who just wanted to stay home and plow and tend to his family, versus seek adventure, which is what Garen's father wanted to do. So it seemed like they sort of justified that a bit later, but in real time, it was like, why on earth do I care?
Yeah. Oh, man. I guess we're just waiting for Garen to have a catch with his dad or something, right, in the Field of Dreams or something. I don't know what they're setting up with it, but I was just like, skip it.
we get Garen calling Willow Thorn a peck, and Willow responds, I know it's a common term, trooper, he said with asperity, his body's distress provoking a sharper tone than he intended, and I know you mean offense, but I really don't like it. So he essentially says, like, hey, cut it out with the slur here.
To which Garen does the, kind of gives him a non-apology apology.
Oh, really?
He says, never really thought about it, you know, just a word is all.
Wow.
To which he replies, words have power as much sometimes as any sword. And that, I think, is just where they end it. So, yeah, he gives him a sorry, not sorry there.
Wow, awesome. He's sorry if Thorn was offended.
Yes. And then shortly after that, by the way, bad seeing comes up.
Oh, my God.
And that's capitalized. So I forgot to add that to the list, but just somebody throw that in the pile of insight, oversight, outsight, side sight.
The clock on the wall reads a quarter past midnight. but the this is a good sort of like, you know, shake your head and do the midway through the sentence. But it says that the neighborhood they're in was called the Silver Square because within that legendary square mile, you could buy, what would you guess? What can you?
Gewgaws? Silver.
Because within that legendary square mile, you could buy or sell virtually anything. So we deem it the Silver Square because of that. Buy. Because you can go there and buy anything. So,
oh boy.
But then they identify the layout of this, and if there's anything that he's not good of, it's letting you know where things are in relation to each other. So maybe he just decided to roll with that because he says there was no plan to the layout. It had the air of something made up as it went along without a thought to the practical ramifications. The standing joke spoke of how every new monarch or chancellor would look down from the heights and vow to bring some order from this never-ending chaos. So that's the knee slapper that the residents of Angwin are tossing around.
Shakespearean joke, I guess. The joke being
it's way worse. I don't know. That's not even like humor in uniform or Mark Russell. That's so this is what
when was the last time you read humor in uniform?
my dad's mom always
that's
had
your
a
grandma's
stack of yeah, Reader's Digest. But so this is actually sort of par for the course. Humor, the bar for humor was set pretty low in these in Willow's Kingdom because I tracked down a comedy album. Like, there's stand-up comedy is a popular art form in this world, and people record albums, and this one was leaked onto the dark web. I don't know if it was ever released because I wouldn't imagine the guy released it after it did not go this well, but
So was this like at the Angwin Funny Bone? Or,
It was at
the Chuckle Hut.
It was at the Yuck Yuck Shack, and they sort of had a full bill. And this guy was Thorn. He was going to record his own stand up album, sort of telling some topical jokes about the world. So we can have a listen to that.
Our next performer has appeared at the main stage at the Planting Festival and a podcast that has been downloaded a total of 3 times. He's recording his first stand-up album tonight, so give it up for Thorn Drumheller.
Hey, keep it going for that last guy, huh? Funny stuff. Yeah, so I just got back from a show in Angwin. They do things a little differently in Angwin. Get this. Every new monarch or chancellor, they look down from the heights and vow to bring some order from this never-ending chaos. You ever notice how a lot more people are saying things with asperity these days? Everywhere you go. That wizard can't even persuade a pig to pull a plow. Asperity. You want cream cheese on that bagel? With asperity. Thorn, you call my wife one more time and I'm gonna kick your ass. Asperity. Hey, pal, if her ass weren't so purty, I wouldn't be saying it with asperity. Hey, they can't all be winners, folks. But hey, speaking of losers, what's up with death dogs, huh? Do we really need the death?
Hey, my infant son just got devoured by a dog.
Oh, was it a death dog? Oh, I don't know. The jury's still out on that.
My son was devoured by a death dog.
Ooh, we got a heckler. I got a heckler, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, pal, next time try heckling with asperity. So I met a wern the other day. Anybody else ever met a wern? Weird thing about werns, no clothes except for the satchel. I wonder, why don't they just make the whole clothes out of the satchel? Oh, okay, the PC police is here, I see.
We're not PC, you just suck.
Yeah, they all say we're not PC until you're making fun of them.
I'm really not PC. I'm quite racist. Listen, you're a peck.
Ooh, the P word. So edgy. This guy's tossing around the P word. Pal, I don't come down to the marketplace where you sell gewgaws of every size and shape and description and tell you how to do your job. Seems like every other question mark you see these days is upside down. You just can't even be sure if something's a question. You gotta go, huh? Hey, is that a question? I don't know. Let me just, huh? You just gotta go like, huh?
That visual humor's not going to translate to your album very well.
Well, if you're listening at home, I was turning my head upside down, like craning my neck as if I like I was looking to see if it was... I got a sick sense of humor, though. You know, for a long time, I thought a mage site was where you go in your web browser to watch videos of mages having sex. And, you know, speaking of mage site, how do you tell the difference between mage sight and insight? I don't know, but every new monarch or chancellor looks down from the heights and vows to let me know. Talked to the High Alduin yesterday. He wanted to know, farmer or wizard? I said, hey, pal, who you bang is your business. I'll stick to Kaya, thanks.
Your wife is dead as my infant son.
All right, I am... getting the light here, so I'm just going to leave you with this one. Guy came up to me the other day and said, hey, Willow Ufgood, I'm trying to remember the name of that iPhone app where you shoot the cardinals at the green pigs. I told him, green pigs, that's a game I haven't birded in a long time.
Kill him!
Well, I've, you know... I've had worse sets.
Okay, wow.
I think we've discussed them here before. Shutting off the hockey game comes to mind.
Oh yeah,
but
well, at least they didn't, you know, chase you off stage calling for your head. It could have gone worse. It always could have gone worse.
Yes, but I did tell you I did have someone threaten to kill me after a set. So I have some sympathy, but yeah, wow, that's the bar for humor.
I
huh?
guess so. I guess so.
Connor, have you? What's your worst? You've done stand-up, right?
Yeah, I don't think stand-up ever went particularly bad. It was never great, but it was also pretty low-stakes environments. But, you know, I think I did improv in the environment you described. I also did one for a corporate gig one time where, you know, you can do a bunch of short form, which is Whose Line Is It Anyways games.
Right.
Where you, and then you know, you could bring up the boss and do stuff with them like that. And then you could do the long form where you do stuff like get a movie from the crowd and announce you're going to do the sequel to it on the spot. And, boy, if they're not expecting 20 minutes of that, that is a,
oh boy.
That does not go over the same way as like, we're going to, you know, we're going to pretend to be your arms and you're going to act like you're going to the dentist. Like,
oh yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Just
make fun of the boss is pretty much, yeah, what you do. Yeah,
palpable shift in tone between the stuff they understand and the stuff that isn't really going anywhere. And that really, you know, laughter is contagious and the reverse is true as well.
Is there a safe word with the other performers to bail on this stuff?
Yeah, we did not have one established and it would have come in handy.
Bridget and I, our worst, we were booked together once for a, maybe I told this, but a cruise up the Mississippi River. So you're locked in a boat and we both, you know, just ate it raw and then we're stuck in the boat with the people. And there was nowhere else. There was not like two spaces.
Yeah.
There was only the one space.
Oh,
so you're
my
just
God.
There with the people.
Lepers.
We ran when the gangplank was coming down. We ran up it at a steep angle and leapt over the edge for real. Laughing. We had the check in hand.
Wow.
So then we just peeled away going, you know how you like have to shake off the embarrassment? That was what we had to do for about an hour.
Jeez. Well, yeah. You should have done a topical cruise boat humor like that, like Thorne did in that recording.
Yeah, right.
Well, they have a brief discussion about Princess Alora, who we still have not met yet, 150 pages into the book. They're doing the whole trope with her where, you know, they're like, she lives in luxury. And they're like, but what type of luxury would not allow her the freedom to leave her castle type of thing? Which I feel like there's been a ton of princesses who have had that that same sort of deal.
Yeah, that seems pretty standard stuff.
Yeah, princesses are always, you know, escaping down into the crowd, dressing up like commoners, that sort of thing. But then the Maesen walk by, they ride by on their horses, aka the Thunder Riders. Willow disguises himself with a wide brimmed hat, and then I'm not sure how much of a disguise Willow can have, because it doesn't seem like there's a lot of Nelwyns walking about this, but more on that later. But this was my favorite part about the Thunder Riders, because they're all like these like tough-looking warriors, but there's a lady?
Mm-hmm.
And it says she wore trousers, which caused some muttering among the more conservative onlookers, that matched the color of her blouse tucked into knee-high boots. And then we get more of this low bar for humor. The funny thing was, for all her finery, she wasn't especially pretty. Looking about the crowd, Thorne picked out an easy handful of young women who matched her in age, but far surpassed her in looks. Thorne just immediately starts being like hotter, 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 hotter the first time he sees one of these ladies. It's incredible.
Hot or not, right away.
Yeah, he's doing the 2 out of 10 would not bang, forum talk meme. But it turns out she's Anna Carey, the Meisen princess.
I guess, hang on, the notes, because of the chapter, like, I just realized, okay, I just dropped my pages. I have no idea where my notes.
Jeez. It's
because of this. It's just so long. It's just like, then what happens?
Yeah.
No clues about where they're going.
Right. Yeah. And like, obviously, I don't know who was the guy earlier, like Finn Glenjin or whatever. Like we assume he's not going to come back up, but presumably this is going to be somebody important.
Finn Raziel.
Sorry.
Rigel, I don't know.
Yeah.
If I'm going to get corrected on all of these. The reader of the book has the keeper of these, I'm guessing.
Sure. So we meet her. We get someone says, like, they get a few more details about how Alora Dunham survived the cataclysm. Like, she got transported from her tower into the king's courtyard. Some people suspected of being a changeling switch and removing the king's kid. It's sort of hinted at and vague plot being doled out piece by piece amongst a lot of other world building.
Right. And the his family is alive, right?
Who, the king? Oh, Willows?
Yeah. Didn't the High Alduin just say that? Well, at least your family's alive. It was in the middle of like this fever dream flashback thing, so I don't know whether it's real or what.
No. Well, I don't remember. I was unclear on that. You would have told me they were dead, but I guess if he said, "Tell my wife I love her," like he did, like
yeah. By the way, with the a couple times in this chapter, we get the long distance fabric assessment again. The cut of her clothes was simple, yet the fabric was exquisite. Rich sand colored weave, the flow and drive of silk, while retaining the sturdiness of cotton.
Wow!
So knew that from afar. And then hair description. So drink if you got them. Mm-hmm. Wore her dark hair as a mane, gathered behind a rebellious forelock and wrapped into a broad braid that touched her backside.
Whoa.
Yeah.
But not as hot as the dozens of other backsides within the distance that Thorne could easily spot.
Yes. he ends that, though. He damns her with faint praise, right? She's not hot, but... you can't help but looking at her.
Right,
you
know? Sure. Right, there's something
it's
about
like
her.
That, yeah, it's those that idiot thing that guys will do, like, I'd bang her. Like, oh, I'm sure she appreciates the favor. Right, thank you for that.
Wouldn't kick her out of bed.
Yeah. Oh, that's, I'm sure that's going to make her day.
But then they sort of march past, and this got into a very confusing part with me. Gurren has tracked down some of the Lion Guards who patrol this city and has told them that Thorne claims he can help find the Magus. Okay. And this confused me because these guards essentially be like, well, thank you, we're arresting you both. But I looked back because I was like, what is this claim about the Magus? And I went back and a couple times the High Alduin says the Magus, but this was first mentioned just like on the boat. Like, yeah, maybe I can help find this Magus. But then there's all of a sudden all this backstory about the Magus. Like, you're not starting that bunk about Nelwyns and the Magus, are you? That's plain daft, don't you know? And he says, trust me, I'm a Nelwyn. The Magus is a Nelwyn. All you need to do is present me at the door. But then it appears there's like a... They say, like, they meet the captain who says, like, there's only one Nelwyn.
Yeah, I didn't get this either because aren't they bringing him there because he is the guy?
They either suspect him of being, yeah, the guy, because he's the only Nelwyn, he must be the Magus, but they do claim that there is a Magus who told him there's only one Nelwyn, but if the Nelwyn's a Magus, I just feel dumber talking about it.
I guess we'll have to get that Venn diagram or the right, you know, yes. Modal logic on that. Not every Magus is a Nelwyn, but every Nelwyn, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
he says,
I can't figure it out.
It's the captain. He says, one Nelwyn, one Magus. Who the hell would else that be but the sacred Princess Alora's godfather? Though why he's so afeard of the likes of you, I have no notion. Her godfather? Impossible as it was, only one name fit that description. Do you mean Willow Ufgood? And then the captain says, the very same, Peck. What a revelation. You're not so daft or dumb after all. The Magus wants you alive, and then, unless I'm much mistaken, which I'm not, he wants you damned.
Hmm. I don't get it.
Yep, so there is a guy who's identified himself as a Magus, but he's not the Nelwyn. He's not a Nelwyn, but they think that the Nelwyn has to be... Again, please sketch it out for us if you're able to.
And then he whacks him around a little.
Uh-huh.
Even though it drew blood and made his jaw ache, more of a promise of what was to come changed. Then he saw the knife. And so he pulls a knife on him and puts it under his chin.
Yeah.
And it's just... I didn't know what to picture there. I was hoping that Crocodile Dundee could help me out. I don't know.
Right.
But it is certified a knife, so.
Okay. Well, yeah, you would have to imagine that if it wasn't, he'd make his name felt, so that he would be he's probably a Mazin or a Thunder Rider. He's got his way with the ladies, so he can size up those semi-attractive Mazin Thunder Riders.
Yeah, so he starts stabbing him with the knife and then hauls him off to prison, right? Or that's at the beginning of the next chapter where they throw him in the dungeon, right?
Sure, yeah, but yeah.
But he's under arrest.
He's been taken in. Gurwin, I don't know if Gurwin betrayed him or was just naive in terms of what these guys were going to do, but they've taken Gurwin away too, to the dungeon.
And that's the end of a very, very long chapter 3.
Extremely long. Just, oh my God. And, you know, that's, again, if you're listening to this without reading, there's a ton of stuff we didn't talk about. Whoa. Well, you know, now that you've recovered your microphone, have not had a heart attack, I think it's time.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. That was, we cut that out, but a first in the 372 pages history. My microphone just fell completely off of my stand and onto the ground. And then I had a heart attack. So,
right. I thought you would maybe just cast a minor glamour on it to make the mount fail.
Well, the next time I ever have to retrieve anything out of a toilet or something, I know that I can cast a spell and just stick my head under the water and breathe just fine.
Yeah, just make sure it doesn't get on your satchel. You don't want toilet water on the...
Come up with pretty lacquered hair after that, though, I'll tell you.
Well, I think before we go into Chapter 4, which has actually some action in it, I think it's time to read some things that also have some action in it, are fanfic or real. And now I bet they bitching because my flow switching, trying to tell me what to write
about some fanfiction. Can't they just be happy? I no longer have to face eviction. I'm ready. I'm ready,
sure.
But I don't know if I'm willing or able.
Well, sure. I think the key is maybe like if you understand what's happening in these, it might be a tip off that it's fanfic written by our competent listeners. And if you're just aghast and confused, it could be real. But yeah, so these are going to be five entries either from later in Shadow Moon or fanfic sent in by our loyal listeners. Number one. Madness, Thorin breathed, because he still couldn't believe it was actually happening. Madness! Nothing gentle about sight or sound any longer. He knew it was time to get undercover, but the sight held him with the attraction of a cobra for the mongoose. There was no way to see far. The forest grew too tall around, preventing the spectacular vistas that should be the stock in trade of such a vantage point. But what was in sight before him was rapidly becoming an inferno. Wind hotter than the breath of a dragon, more appropriate to a desert where the only scrap of moisture is what lives within your own body. A roar like an avalanche, as though all the furnaces that ever were had been brought together in this one spot and stoked hot enough to consume the world. A hand tugged his trouser leg, Elora, and he ducked beside her, the child hurriedly brushing stray sparks from his hair before they had a chance to do some mischief.
Mongoose?
Mongoose!
Wow. I don't know if that's, boy, you know, the worm is wriggling in front of my, my nose as I I slowly circle it.
You're going to debate
it. I take a little nibble of it, and then I say, all right, I'll bite. That's real.
Okay. There's too many. You don't want to, like, you know, Iocane powder yourself from Princess Bride about, well, if it was fanfic and they put in the mongoose, they would clearly be, it would be too obvious. And
yeah, there's nothing you can do. That's the beauty of being able to write fanfic and then just sit back and watch me suffer.
Number two. She wended her way about the pavilion, weaving between schemers, drunkards, and dancers alike, amid the swirl of flutes and tambourines. She made no motion, save what might befit her beauty. Garin was transfixed by her lissome grace, swift and sure as a striking serpent. What might have been a voice at the back of his mind cautioned him, urged him not to lower his guard, faded completely as the spice girl miraged before him out of the clamoring throng. The sun has kissed you all red. You are of the north, yet you are not clothed like the traitors. What draws you here across the sea, she inquired, a deft finger twirling a loop of lock from the midnight cascade that trailed to the small of her dusty back.
Serpent? Mongoose serpent? What is happening here, people?
People are they're learning and adapting.
Well, all right. I'm going to say it's fanfic.
Okay. We had heard of the Spice Lands. Remember that? That was
yes. Camel caps on that, please.
Number three. The way of the world is so hard, Alora Dannon, crooned the deceiver, almost as though he were speaking more to himself than to another, with a wilding change to his voice that struck Thorne with that same disconcerting sense of familiarity he felt in Alora's hall. He knew the face of Willow was a mask, but wondered more than ever about what lay behind it. So much pain, so much grief, you want none of that. Accept the pattern laid out for you. Let things happen as they were ordained. Embrace the fire. Let it burn away all troubles, all cares. Be one, little spirit, with the oblivion that should have been yours at birth. Let us be one.
Willow? Don't know this guy.
He knew Who's the face Willow? Of Willow was a mask. I'm not sure. It's mask, M-A-S-K, not M-A-S-Q-U-E.
Ooh, a clue. Well, no, it's not a clue. We're 50-50 on that. Okay. Oh, boy. All right. Well, I don't know. Fanfic?
Okay. number four. Are the troops ready, Lieutenant? Garin nodded. All to men are up, sword, bow, and oars. He paused and added, but the clan Mowen fled o'ernight and took the griffins with. But that you knew, what this sorcery of yours? Thorne grimaced. His outsight had given him vision of this betrayal. He dared not bring it up to even his closest advisors, lest the Mowen leaders be forewarned of the extent of his powers. Then ready the troops. We march at once. We will free Alora Dannon if we need to fight to the last man. Or Brownie, gulped Rule.
let me ask you, is that your pronunciation of Lieutenant?
Yes.
That was you.
Yes. Oh, it wasn't. Sorry. It was written as Lieutenant.
Uh-huh. Fanfic.
Why?
Because it's Lieutenant.
Uh-oh.
And they put in the Lieutenant. And I think.
Well, what? All right. Well, we'll see if you're right, and then we'll hash it out.
Okay.
Otherwise, yeah. This is one you really had to see just to get those, what I was trying to read there. Anyway.
Yeah, no, I understood.
So, number five, last one. This demon held the Nelwyn in its thrall. Even to his insight, the stairway had no end. It loomed behind him, and seemingly in every direction, still without form. Anger welled with pride at its right hand. He was not to be so easily cowed. "Show yourself," he yelled, the sound immediately swallowed. It came, flowing out of the shadows, like a liquid. Not a liquid. Hair. Voluminous amounts of raven, flowing hair, shot through with bright pinpoint stars, rustling endlessly beyond his sight before settling around a lithe, tall, luminously pale form. "Not what you expected," it intoned.
I don't know. I'm going to say it's real.
Okay. All right. Let's see how you did. Number one, the one with the mongoose. You said that was real. That was real. That was real.
Whoa!
Yeah, there's a there's no actual mongoose, but he looks at someone like a cobra would a mongoose. So, yeah. So that's good. That's good to see. No word about whether it was a special mongoose or not. Number two, you thought was fanfic. That was the Spice Girl. That was fanfic sent in by someone. I don't think this is the real name. Sham Bam Bamina. Thank you for that.
You're gonna be embarrassed when you find out that is a distinguished family name.
Number three, you deemed this fanfic. This was the Face of Willow was a mask and the Deceiver. You thought it was fanfic. That was real. There was a Deceiver later wearing the Face of Willow as a mask. Not sure what the hell's going on. So that was your first wrong one. Number four was Lieutenant. You said it was fanfic because of that. It was fanfic. And that was by, that was fanfic. Oh, sorry. Yeah, that was, we identified the first one. That was fanfic by Steven. And then the final one you said was real. That was the flowing hair, not coming out and saying not what you expected. You said it was real. That was fanfic by Patrick, who is a Patreon supporter. He tricked you up with that, probably with the hair and the insight. So, well,
60%.
Yeah, not bad. It's not bad.
Slightly better than guessing.
All right. So thank you to everyone who sent in fanfic this time around. We've been posting some of them. There's a Discord for Patreon people. That's a chat room. I've posted some of the ones we haven't used in there. So swing on over to Patreon/372pages, and you can join everybody, get episodes early, get extra stuff. It's very fun, and we appreciate everybody who chips in on Patreon.com/372pages.
And now, unfortunately...
Back to the book.
Chapter 4.
Oh, my God.
Where we quickly get Soul Eater and Dark Realms.
Right.
Here's what I don't understand. They throw them... This is a pretty simple thing to put in a fantasy book, right? They're getting thrown in a dungeon.
Yep.
I mean, you know, what's the cartoon, daily cartoon
the
that's
been Wizard of
for
Id.
700 years? The Wizard of Id.
Yes.
We know the drill here.
Yeah. Jim Tice was able to get this down.
Yes. And he can't even describe. This is very confusing. There's a thing that happens right away. He's getting locked up, I guess. And this happens. Sodding buggery bastard, hissed the warder. As at last he wrenched the shackle open, and Thorn knew the curse had nothing to do with the rusty metal. Bad enough we're down here, spoken in a rushed whisper, almost like a prayer, as though the words themselves might keep away untold horrors. He has to go and throw down a bloody challenge. Don't watch him. He shouted suddenly to his companion, the reference to Thorn. He ain't going nowhere. Watch the bloody back, rot your eyes. Sorry, was the shame-voiced apology. What is going on? What is it?
It's a dungeoner complaining about having to be in a dungeon?
But who's saying what to who?
Oh, that one, I had no idea who was apologizing and all that. It's a patented dialogue where it's very easy to have no idea who is talking. It's a stunning feat, really.
Yeah, and going back and reading it is I'm too resentful to do it.
Right.
I think just reading it right there, it means that they're afraid of something down there, which, you know, comes up later.
Yeah.
And so they don't even want to be there. I guess that's all it is. And he's talking to someone else, one of his, you know, his second or something. I don't know. Well, anyway, just tick me off right away.
But yeah, like you said, there is you don't walk into this dungeon and then you're surprised by like an open concept kitchen and, you know, a zebra skin rug on the floor. It's like, no, this is exactly what Jim Tice was writing about. The steps themselves were so worn and slippery from a slick coating of watery slime leaching off the walls, eloquent evidence that visits were few and very far between. So yeah, just, you know, Dungeon 101.
Yep, he lowers his stature to work to his advantage. His lower center of gravity and smaller feet made it much easier for him to negotiate a safe descent. And I just thought at that, like, well, you guys built the place. I mean, why are you making it too steep for your own men to walk down?
Yeah, or like, you know, make the entrance that you have to go to bad, and then, you know, the cells. Make the cells the miserable place with slime leaching off the walls, because you don't have to go in there.
Right. Get some damn handrails up and carpet it and let your guys walk safely down it.
Well, yeah. So the captain is down there. He seems the least affected by the mood of the place. He stepped to the edge of the field of light, letting the gloom shroud his features and turn his face into a monster mask, M-A-S-K of plains and hollows. So, how those two differ, we will be forever debating, I think, for the rest of time.
Right. We know there's one later, so maybe it was just the single MASK. I don't know. And we're back to, I don't know. So he tells him that he's probably going to get chewed up by rats, I think is what the captain says. There's vermin down here, and they'll strip the flesh from your bones and the soul from your body.
yeah, but then someone, I think, corrects him. Because someone else,
oh, really?
Someone else says, no vermin down here at all is why. Been eaten the lot, or chased away, you see, by the demon. Capitalized demon. Stories say these vaults is haunted. Reports go back as far as there's logbooks to record them. So there's logbooks in the Willow universe. By a creature so fearsome it'll strip the flesh from your bones and the soul from your body.
Okay, so the captain, he wasn't aware of this. He's like, when did we get rid of our flesh-stripping vermin?
Right.
That's how we get information out of people.
Yeah, he's giving the tour to investors. Like, yeah, we've got a shuffleboard table. No, when did we get rid of the shuffleboard table? Oh, it's getting repaired. All right, yeah, I don't come down here too often now.
The captain, this was a place that I decided, maybe I like the captain. The captain turned back, the flames of torch playing with the puffy rolls and hollows of his face, casting as it in an ever-shifting display that managed to be both hideous and surprisingly silly. So, you know, he's having a laugh with the torch down
there. Yeah, the captain gets the, you thought they were hard on that woman who wasn't as hot as the dozen other women nearby her, but the captain gets the short end of the stick so far in terms of characters, his descriptions.
Right. And then there's some deal about, maybe you can explain this to me. He's sucking on stones and casting minor glamours and stuff.
Yeah, so they lock him up, and someone says, are we sure this is what the Magus wants? And the captain says, as a matter of fact, he said, offering the lie with a leer. The orders were specific. This is precisely what he wants. So the cap, you know, they tell you right away, the captain, who we know is not a good guy, it's confirmed he is not a good guy. So they lock him up. And he immediately escapes. So the tension is existed for maybe about a sentence. But this is involved by he casts a perceptual net, not capitalized. And that allows him to see like what else is in the dungeon. And they keep saying like there's nothing. It's not like that it's dark. There is nothing here. But they had stripped him down, removed his possessions, but he had cast a minor glamour to protect his traveling belt pouch, which has all his stuff in it.
Right. So the minor glamour only protects his pouch.
Yes. That's why it's minor, I would suppose. If it was a major glamour, he kind of probably protected all of his possessions. So maybe that's what happened to the Nern. He only cast a minor glamour, and that's why all his clothes was just the satchel.
But it does bring to mind, you know, and this I hope this is in the act continuing for Willow is why don't they make the whole thing out of the spell?
Right, yes,
if you just why cover just the belt pouch it's, or the hey, you know it,
maybe he'll workshop that one because it did not go well in his sense.
No, right.
But yeah, so then you get a very, in my mind, disturbing sequence because you just the way he describes this act of how he escapes. Thorne hardly noticed a stir as Frangine retrieved the prize. In my mouth, please, Thorne told him.
Yeah, I wondered, where's this going?
They were cool to the taste, some rough, some smooth as blown glass. He sucked the moisture from his mouth, ruthlessly repressing twin desires to gag and cough. So, yeah, he's got his brownies in his pouch, popping stones into his mouth.
And then he sings? He sings a tune in his mind. It was nothing. It was not very complicated. Nothing of the order of what he'd done up in the mountains.
Okay.
Which I thought he had spit blood up in the mountain. I didn't remember that he was singing complicated tunes.
He sang a winter tune at some point in time, but
okay, so he did sing a winter tune. Well, this is much simpler than a winter tune, so put the winter tune out of your head and think of something much simpler, and that's what he's doing.
He casts something on these stones that allow them to, they cast light, but he also casts another thing on them that makes them not hurt when he holds them. So once more, a wizard did it. He can just do whatever he wants whenever he wants.
He pulled a glow stick out of his satchel and snapped it. Right. That's all we needed there.
But then the whole time he's doing this, he's been handcuffed. And so Brownies help him pick those locks, but for whatever reason, he opted to, you know, have them plopping rocks into his mouth out of his pouch first, as opposed to them. Maybe they needed the light of these to pick his locks. Who knows? Who cares?
Who cares indeed? Yes.
He gets upset that they don't light up the dungeon as much as he thought they would, and once again emphasizes there's nothing here in the way I described it before. It's not that it's just dark. It's that there is a physical nothing. And they start talking about the demon, I guess, that's rumored to be here.
They talk about the demon, but I'm immediately interested in another character. Old Spanio Duguay.
Yes, yes. Oh, that was just a triple underline for me.
Why is the book not called Old Spanio Duguay?
Yeah, Spanio Duguay, who had seen a demon once, and I guess, you know, it was like Lampy seeing a dragon in Pete's Dragon. He came back and told everyone about it back in Willow's town.
Yeah, and but that's I mean, this is all we're getting of him, right?
He just
gives a one paragraph description of what Old Spanio said about seeing a demon.
Yeah, he said it was like watching a potter work clay on the wheel. That's what he told folks back at the Ram's Head Inn back in Nelwyn Vale. He couldn't hold the shape for more than a heartbeat. Compared it to mercury, maybe. Mercury exists in the Willowverse. Or melting wax, great globs of stuff bubbling and flowing in the air before him. So, yep, that was Spanio's tune, and then I assume he was just, you know, he was dancing for nickels so he could buy his rum after that or something.
Right. Well, this is, and here, that is followed up by the levity that I was talking about, the alleged levity, because Rule says right away, if this is meant to be reassuring, like, so I assume that's a laugh line, like... You know, don't tell me about melting wax and mercury when we're about to meet it, would you please?
Well, we get some more of that later from Frangine. In case you missed the levity, they emphasize it for you. Thorin, for whatever reason, is like talking to the dark, and he wishes it well. He wished the dark well, and to his surprise, and fair fortune to you, he said aloud to the dark as though it was real. Then we get this. Are you demented? Frangine whispered. A rhetorical question, because from the way he asked, it was abundantly clear the answer had to be absolutely. So he just really emphasizes how their verbal jugular going for goes, the way that a sitcom middle child would. What are you, demented? And then the dad's like, that sounds like a rhetorical question to me, because of the way you asked it, it is clear that you're intending it to be.
As he's delivering these zingers, remember, he's like straightening up his spangled cuffs.
Yes,
and
right.
Puffing out his ascot.
Yeah,
and
twirling his cane and
and just dropping these witticisms.
Mage Sight makes its triumphant return.
Mage Sight, there's a sentence here that gives us a lot of uppercase or a capitalization, that is. A sudden flash of inspiration. He had no idea what prompted it. The notion came from deep within the part of himself where his own talent interacted with the great powers of the world and worlds beyond. So now we know there are worlds beyond, and since it is a proper noun, they're, you know, well explored.
Oh,
and I assume we're going to visit them at some point. Well, but yeah, great powers of the world.
But they're not. He just learned the world was round. I guess that was 12 years ago, because that was the prologue.
Maybe Worlds Beyond is just like
heaven.
A small village 8 miles away or something.
Yeah, they change their name to that to get attention from people,
right.
Like Truth or Consequences did.
Right.
This is something that I have thought on every single page of this book. It says, so easy, so tempting to yield to the tiredness in his soul. And that is pretty much the motto of the reader of Shadow Moon, I would say.
Right.
My soul has been very tired as we've read it.
I noted earlier that as they were picking the lock, I think Rule is undone by it. He can't move anymore. He is exhausted.
Oh, nice.
From picking the lock. But nothing changes.
Yeah, well, that's par for the course.
He was trembling with fatigue. So. But he seems fine. He's still cracking wise.
How many stones did he have to lug up to his mouth, man? That's But yeah, so this is like a video game essentially, where you get caught by the guard, like Maniac Mansion. They toss you in the prison, and you know, and sometimes that's game over. But this is immediately, there's a guy that's like, "I'll help you escape." Sure, it's barely even a setback, and he probably gives you something that you can use later while you're in the dungeon. So it actually helped you.
Right, and so they. What do they? They just creep back up the stairs.
Yeah, they creep up the stairs. They get a sense that a woman died there.
Oh yeah, and he describes it: a javelin butt to the jaw had stunned her. A whiplash curling about her ankle, upending her. She'd done a demi cartwheel, her head striking the outer lip of the stairs with that unique, awful, fatal crack.
Oh my god.
At which I just wrote, Willow. Some woman cracking her skull open on the stairs that he's right. on.
And then it's like, yeah, her essence, though, was claimed by this demon or whatever's down there, who they do not encounter in this passage, at least. They make a safe exit from here, I believe.
Yeah, well, do we end before they're safe?
I guess they do make it, because Willow is like using his outsight or whatever. Someone says, "This is a surprisingly clean dungeon." I didn't know what that meant, because we were told many times that it wasn't. And then, he spies on the guards, and he says that they are also grumbling over their beer, so they could be hazy IPA fans as well. But they're it. Every level, every cell, all empty. And then Frangine says, "My observation precisely," echoed Frangine with an appropriate and well-deserved air of triumph. Thorn smiled a tigerish smile, hoping it wouldn't be seen by his companions, and repressed a sudden urge to murder.
Willow.
Again, our hero. I don't know.
Is he talking about Frangine?
I think so. That's all, by the context of this, that's all you could be led to believe. Just by another wisecrack, I guess. But or maybe it's just, you know, like that previous thing about being tired in your soul. It's meant to echo what the reader is feeling.
But before we leave this, I should point out they're plowing new ground here. George Lucas sat down and he came up with a device called a cloak that causes people to have a hard time seeing you as you creep around.
Wow.
So, you know, kudos for that right. Invention,
right.
That fantasy invention.
Oh.
But that was made from a passive charm.
Oh, wow. Good Lord.
Yes.
Oh.
It made him blend with the background. Any who saw him from here on would fit him with the context of the moment. In a very real sense, he'd blend in with the background, and they'd never give him a second thought.
Oh. So
he's just wearing his digital camos.
Right,
yeah.
Yes. His tactical cloak. But a passive charm, different than a minor glamour.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Different than mage sight, insight, outsight, soul leader, shadow forces, dark realms, worlds beyond, great powers, talent. Different than
we do get a great line. I forget who said it. It might be one of the guards, might be one of our three people, but we do get the line. And soul leader is camel cased. A soul leader is by nature evil. which that's good to know. That's
I thought that's what you call the guys who sold that incredibly strong lemonade that made my mouth pop.
Right. Yeah. Soul leader and sons lemonade. It's got a old timey logo. Oh.
Original Soul Eaters is right across the booth from Soul Eaters original.
Right, yeah. You know, no, you know, by nature, not evil for the past, since, you know, 1912. more great world building there, because a lot of people were worried about that. This section's coming to a close.
Yeah, that was my last note about him hoping to murder Frangine.
It ends with Frangine saying, "You talk like an Elwyn, Frangine, a sudden sharp interruption, and you're starting to act too much like a Daikini." Don't know in what respect. It appears to us that other than height, Elwyns and Daikinis are about as different as minor glamours and passive charms. So who knows?
At least he didn't, you're starting to lacquer your hair like a worm. You know, at least he didn't throw that in.
Yeah, well, yeah, that could be fighting words. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Whew. Good work, everyone.
Yeah.
Who actually read this?
I think so. I mean, you got to hand it to people. I mean, some people are listening to the audiobook, which appears to be a bridge, so that could be the way to go. But, man, it is a It's a slog. But fortunately, a bunch of people sent us their emails about their thoughts. And I think the very first email we have is going to sum up a lot of people's experiences to a T. So let's read some emails.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the dinner. We're going to cruise out, man. We're stealing people's mail.
So this one comes from Chris. If we get a better email subject line for this season, I will be shocked. Your summary made my pregnant wife cry. So
that's going to be tough to top.
So we're leading with that. He says the two of us have been listening together since shortly before after you wrapped up Armada. Of course, we were thrilled again when you started up with Tech War and immediately supported your Patreon. I read the books, but she doesn't. She's been able to follow along with your summaries just fine. Until now. Last episode, in the middle of the description of the death dog fight, she gave a howl of rage and said, I have no idea what's going on, with tears of frustration on her face. She's 22 weeks pregnant. We're expecting baby Magdalena in April. Make all the jokes you like about that. I will not. That's a nice name.
I love that.
If it had come up in the book, I'm sure we would have made fun of it, but yeah. I told her that it was confusing because it's written that way, and we turned off the podcast so I could explain roughly what hadn't happened in the story. At the end, she stopped crying and said, but she said, I know you explained it, but I have no idea what's going on. I don't think I can listen to this book. I said, it's actually much worse if you're reading it. So,
oh, that I'm sorry that that makes me happy, but it makes me happy for good reasons.
Right, yeah.
Like I feel, you know, we are simpatico. Yes. I totally get
it. Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, it's if this is what's going to trigger the emotional mood swings, it's better this than, you know, being stuck in traffic or not being able to decide what, you know, flavor ice cream you want at the store or something like that. So, thank you, Chris. Thank you, Chris's wife. And, you know, we await the arrival of Magdalena in a couple months. Hopefully no more tears because of George Lucas, since then.
Will Magdalena have, you know, any memories of this?
Right.
Did you read a book to me? Well,
right. Yeah.
I have this weird memory.
Yeah. Every time someone mentions the dark web, it's going to be like Christopher Walken in The Dead Zone. She's just going to like thrust back and be like, why do those words trigger weird, vaguely funny skits that I don't understand the references to? This is another one. This is good. This is from Emily, who's a Patreon supporter as well. She says, I enjoy your podcast so much that they are on my favorite tracks list. That's very kind of you. This has not been a problem until, I love it when people's emails take that sort of, my family was enjoying this until, like, yeah. I listened to these.
Spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
I was listening to these with my 8-year-old until. But yeah, she says, this has not been a problem until I left one on, not realizing it was still playing. At work, I clearly hear the phrase "fuck a duck" from Connor as a nice lady is visiting the office with her child. I'm pretty sure she didn't hear it, as she immediately didn't escort her child out of the room, and she asked to stay to ask questions about bunny care. She works in an animal shelter. Usually, the public is not around when I have my music on, but today was the one time I forgot.
Oh, that is dangerous. That is dangerous. Mostly, you have a great chance of baffling people, but occasionally, yeah, you're going to get something like that.
Yes, absolutely. This one's from Brian D. This is the correction I alluded to. We've been using the term "a wizard did it," a Simpsons reference. I thought that was from the one where Homer voiced Poochie and got to meet the voices of Itchy and Scratchy. He wrote in to correct me, and my shame is deep. He says, "A wizard did it" was from Lucy, Xena the warrior princess Lawless's reply to Professor Frink, the nutty professor-esque character voiced by Hank Azaria. We know Professor Frink. He's the guy that says "glaive" at a science fiction convention panel. So yeah, this is from A Treehouse of Horror, where Lucy says that a wizard did it anytime something crazy happened on Xena the warrior princess.
This must be like you being, you know, a professor and having a student say, you know, you are completely wrong. You know, like I actually know the guy that wrote this book. Like this has got to wound you deeply.
Yeah.
You are, if nothing, if not proud of your Simpsons.
Yeah. And that student's name?
Knowledge.
Albert Einstein. But no, that cut deep because, yeah, I know the Simpsons well enough that I always feel like if there's some instance of, you know, paraphrasing one of their jokes and not being aware of it, no one would believe me if I said it was a mistake. But, yeah, I had at my brother's bachelor party, there was a Simpsons trivia contest, and I was like, well, you know, put me in, coach. But a guy for one where I wasn't sure, but I was pretty sure. A guy was like, I think it's this. And I'm like, I don't know. And that guy was right. And I like spent the rest of the weekend apologizing to him.
Wow. Yeah, that's always, that's rough. Yeah. But yeah, the Simpsons to you are, I think it's the only thing that bridges. Like if the term Rory Calhoun comes up and you go, right. I know that. I'm 100% sure it's from.
Right, yes.
It's not from the source. It's from a secondary
source.
Well,
yeah, those work just as well. You know, it makes you interested about who that is.
Sure. For the record, I didn't really run across Rory Calhoun.
Okay, that's good.
Either,
yes.
But I just...
we've got these two other ones. We've collected the, like we said, scooping, Gaddafi-ing, Sevi-bopping. This one comes from PBY Guy. He says, regarding all those things, there were kids at my elementary school who played butt cutter tag.
I'm rubbing my hands together.
In order to tag someone out, the kid who was had to slide his hand down the booty crack of the victim in question. He says, I didn't partake myself, and we absolutely did get an awkward talk from our teacher about it. No word whether it's, inside or outside the pants, though. So one of them is substantially worse.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to make the assumptions outside.
And then the next one of these comes from Nathan. He says, there was a game in my small town Indiana high school, which awarded points for male-on-male sexual assault. He goes on to describe a card swipe, forming your hand like a blade and running it quickly and firmly up the butt crack was worth 1 point. A simple nut tap was worth 1 point. A mauger claw, M-A-U-G-E-R, firmly gripping the entire package was worth 1 point. That seems up the, you know, I'd be simple nut tapping all day. Yeah. And then this is what he says. An elevator shaft requires two people. Person one stands behind the victim, squats or kneels, and places his arm through the victim's legs. Person two stands in front of the victim and grasps the hands or forearm of person one. Then person one or two lift up simultaneously, lifting the victim off the ground by the crotch was worth 2 points.
Good heavens.
He says, titty twisting was encouraged. I don't believe it was awarded any points. The game was called Peter Warfare. Our principal came over the intercom after morning announcements and told us that students were not allowed to play Peter Warfare and that anyone caught playing Peter Warfare would face disciplinary action. My favorite school announcement ever.
Wow. Peter Warfare is the guard outside of Elora's castle tower there, too. It reminds me of I'll just dovetail on that, the worst prank of all time. I forgot about this. The power sit-up. Are you familiar with this?
From you, yes. But yeah, it's... Yeah, go on.
Well, you question the strength and manhood of your fellow classmate, and then you challenge him to do one sit-up where they put a towel over your head, and then they sort of lean their hands on it, and can you kind of break out of
that? So a restraint, like a resistance band.
Yeah. And so as you're starting to resist, you're moving up a bit, they pull the towel off of your face, and some guy has pulled his pants down in front of you, and your head slams into...
Is this apocryphal, or is it just something people heard about their cousin's friend doing at the school across town?
No, I've witnessed at least four of them.
Wow, dear God.
It's awful.
So we have another email from Sharon. She says, I'd written the email the other day and asked you not to judge that I loved Willow when it came out. I decided to rewatch for the first time in over 25 years this weekend. And oh, geez, judge me. I deserve judgment. I am laden with shame. What the hell was I thinking? I hate slapstick and almost all of it was slapstick. I thought I had higher standards. This has opened an unpleasant window into my youthful soul. I guess it wasn't terrible, but it was just silly and childish and basically bog standard. My opinion remains unchanged, however, that the tone of the book is a hell of a shift. The book seems relentlessly miserable, unpleasant, and all caps, boring. Well, Sharon, you might have missed that joke about the city fathers going up into the towers and weighing in on whether they were... I don't know what the joke was even. I can't even remember it.
It was that they never... did anything about it or something. Yeah, sorry. I must have got it right. Yeah.
This is from another Patreon supporter named Patrick. He says, I used to work in comics, and this was the theory that Claremont had was so bad because he was used to other people filling in all the information. He says, I used to work in comics, and authors and even artists can get to lean on their assistants at times. I'm familiar with directions like a simple X and the words cityscape goes here or big explosion. I wonder if Claremont's editor got notes like this. Description of something other than hair goes here.
Nice.
What else do we have? We got one from Alex. This is the one I talked about. He says, this week's reading contains several shocking revelations about the universe of the book. I am assuming you've also taken notes of some of these, but I wanted to share what I've collected nonetheless. He mentions the trick-or-treat hauntings. That means they celebrate Halloween. He says, later on when Thorne and Gelwyn arrive in Angwin, Thorne describes seeing vendors selling silk-screened shirts. This particular fact shook me to my core, as it means the chances of characters running into someone wearing a Big Johnson t-shirt are now zero, non-zero. Finally, Thorne describes himself as feeling like an automaton left to rust. I take this reference to mean mechanical robots exist in this world, or at the very least, the idea of them does. Is this an oblique reference to droids? Does this lend credence to the theory that Willow takes place in the Star Wars universe? Probably not. Unless, and then he goes on, while Googling Willow theories, I happen to discover Willow has a page on Wikipedia. Below is a section from the Star Wars Connection sections of that page. It's too long to read the entire thing, but I would suggest everyone check it out. It's pretty interesting. And this excerpt says, on April 1st, 2006, Star Wars updated its data bank with elements from these novels, indicating that Willow stories were set on a planet in the Star Wars universe called Andowine. These entries were based on Warwick Davis' cameo as Weasel in Star Wars The Phantom Menace, whom Davis often says people assume to be Willow. This was later revealed to be an April Fool's joke. Right. Yeah, they got us. They got us good. Oh man.
You totally. Oh, it worked. Oh,
yeah. We thought it was Willow, but it was Weasel. And he was hanging around, making anti-Semitic remarks with Watto. So Weasel and Watto, they're great. The Amos and Andy of our time.
Oh, fun. God, I wish you had seen. Oh, I wish you could have been there.
So, yeah, those are the great emails we got this week. Keep them coming. Stories of principals having to make humiliating PA announcements to middle schoolers more than anything.
Any successful completions of power sit-ups, I'd like to hear about them, please. Right. You can just slip them into my inbox
right
there.
Do not try it on your 22-week pregnant wife, however, Chris. Let us know when the baby arrives. We'll have to send a Chuck the Cow onesie your way. I think those exist. Oh, I think that's something you can get.
Oh, no.
All right, well, wrap things up with dumb sentences of the week.
A sentence begins with a capital letter. A capital letter is a letter that's big. A capital letter is not a small letter. A capital
right.
letter is big.
How many
big,
we get?
We got a lot.
People actually reading.
Oh yeah, we got a lot. 1, 2, 3. We got a solid 10 or so. And I had two more that we didn't touch on. I sort of skated over them, and so I banked them. But
you take mine then. I think I don't have.
Oh
one.
Wow. All right. Well, we'll start with our listeners. This is good. David wrote in, a cage is a cage, my friend, no matter how gilded, said the troubadour, punctuating his commentary with some sharp riffs on his guitar.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about they chase the troubadour,
yeah,
right? They kind of follow him around.
Lengthy troubadour encountering thing and trying to get information out of him about the, I think that's who they were debating. Like, hey, she's not really so free if she can't leave the tower. That was the troubadour's argument.
And Garen, like, insults him, and he walks away, and then Willow does the, hey, man, I'm sorry about my friend. Isn't that kind of what
yes,
happens?
Yes, exactly. That's when Garen goes to retrieve the red, the lion guards.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was busting out Smoke on the Water and Seven Nation Army with some sharp riffs.
Right.
This is from Heather and also Stephen. They wrote in, banners and pennants. Commemorative mugs, shirts emblazoned with silkscreen sayings and sigils, most notably one ascribed to the sacred Princess Alora, gewgaws of every size, shape, and description. Heather wrote, this book was published in 95. I think this is what Chris Claremont thought the merchandise tents at Lollapalooza looked like. not too far off, just probably less stuff about Primus. This next one is from Mike T. It was Thorn smiled a tigerish smile, hoping it wouldn't be seen by his companions, and repressed a sudden urge to murder. He says, he coins a new term. He says, I didn't feel like the godlike Thillo, Thorn and Willow, is going to get an adequate challenge for a kingdom that throws him in dungeons and then neglects to, lock any of the doors. So, the godlike thing is probably just going to rear its head throughout the book, so we better get used to it. But the tigerish grin, tigerish smile, I don't know exactly what that means.
Thillo is
good. Yeah, that is. This is from Lucas, not George, I hope. It says, the Thunder Riders came in, and then the Eagles attacked them in a birdemic, I guess. But he says about the female eagle, she was attacking like a falcon. That's how the author of this book describes the way an eagle is attacking somebody. He says he thinks it's the worst comparison since Toto compared Mount Kilimanjaro to Mount Olympus. And that's something I read it and I was like, and I didn't really realize how dumb it was until Lucas pointed that out.
The eagle flashed a tigerish smile.
This one's from Patrick. It says, the folk there, none of them human, liked their privacy and had very little interest in the affairs of the hustling, bustling Daikini come lately across the way. So he had the same questions. Are they human? Or is he just stating that nobody across the way is human either? Patrick, we're as confused and angry as you are.
Very much so.
This next one's from Janelle. He says, at first it appeared that the young Dailies would protest this point. Then he thought better of it, accepting Thorne's request with a nod of the head and an audible closing of his mouth.
He snapped his teeth.
It's a callback to Mad Mardigan in Top Gun.
Yes, exactly. Wow.
So, yeah, that's the...
How deep does this go?
This one is from Dave. Easily a dozen cities, new and old, great and small, still living and long dead, were scattered about the bay, as well as more villages than could be counted, yet a body could still cast an eagle eye shoreward at any point and find a stretch of land as pristine and unspoiled as the day it was made. And he just says, really, what about the 12 cities and countless villages you just mentioned? I assumed that sentence was so long he forgot about what he mentioned at the beginning of it.
I think that happens constantly.
when I'm looking for pristine land on shore, I cast an eagle eye shoreward like a falcon. That's how I. Andrew submitted, the grace of a cat, muttered Thorn, not without some admiration, and twice the self-possession. He says, I have no clue what Thorn is trying to say about this person I just met. I could barely tell the person being talked about was in the same room as Thorn and the captain until they left. But, I guess cats are more self-possessed than graceful in this book.
Oh, man. Well, and it's always good to hear that he gets to the end of a paragraph before he understands stuff, too.
Right.
I've been living in that world and going, I'm a dummy.
Yeah, it's like a movie, a really, artsy movie that you have to, what did this mean? Ending of, Mulholland Drive online. And then you're like, all right, I guess, but I really feel like I should be able to understand that as I'm watching for this to work.
Yeah, the searches are auto-completing on this thing, for sure.
Yeah. And then this is the last one from Alex. I remember, Thorn said softly while he worked, as though they were in the road, sitting about their campfire, only this time it was him telling the ghost stories to while away the evening and not the brownies. Old Spanio Dungwe. He said he'd met a demon once. So yeah, that I guess we didn't have the whole introduction of Spanio Dungwe, but it had a gigantic parenthetical introduction in the middle. That's incredible. But he says, let me rewrite this sentence so it doesn't sound like a high schooler trying to hit a word count. I remember, Thorne said softly while he worked, old Spanio Dungwe said he'd met a demon once.
Oh, that seals it. I'm writing the Spanio Dungwe book. Fan fiction book.
Any fanfic that you wants to mention Spanyo Dungway, we will look favorably on, even though it will probably be a tip off. Just if it's really funny, we'll read one of those, but write the real stuff too. My dumb sentences, let me just cue them up right here. The first one I had was, oh, this was good. This is talking about Thorn. Once he sort of like cleaned himself up, but once he got on the boat, his hair, he decided, mainly to leave alone. Aside from a good trim to neaten its length and some serious and regular brushing to work out an ungodly mess of knots and tangles. You know, but aside from all that, he mainly left it alone. and then we get this one. This was Morag, who was the large lady who I believe is Mulroon's main squeeze or his sister or something. I mean, Mulroon was killing it with the ladies, so I can't imagine he was settling down. But anyway, Morag says this. So, bucko, what's the fuss then? She demanded of Gurren, who bridled at the appellation.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that was as bad as the first sentence of chapter 3. But that made me just ball my fists up.
I did find a couple. I won't say that these are dumb sentences, but I do want to include them because I passed over them. The Captain Morag, yeah. I like the sudden description of her. The big woman shook her head. Hey, man, you should have seen me before. I've been on this Noom program for a long time. I've dropped a lot. Jeez.
Oh, by the way, lady, 12 women in this immediate vicinity who are hotter than you.
Way hotter. I also liked that we get a description of, or at least a oblique reference to the eagle boning.
Right.
He and Anel had mated young and mated for life.
Oh, yeah. I like that too. You had to throw in young? Like, I mean, I guess, you know.
I don't know.
Sure, that could mean something perfectly innocent, but it's, if you wanted to look at it untoward, you could certainly do so.
I won't read it, but I will note that there was a 4-sentence description of a crossbow bolt. so that was just something to, just marvel.
Wait, crossbow?
Should I capitalize it?
Oh, a crossbow. Yeah. Okay. Yep. I've seen.
So think of a shield wall, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay. Well, this is a crossbow.
Right. Dumb as hell, people. Thank you.
Whoo. So 50 pages again? Is that?
I think that seems to be the going rate. And
we'll
be taking this one into 2020, I think.
Holy smokes.
But, you know, what else are you going to do? It's too hard to read. And, there's enough to discuss.
Yeah.
We're looking.
So the next reading is like we still have a half of chapter 4 and then chapter 5. I'm scrolling here and I'm getting dispirited with every scroll of
the reading after next is going to put us into the halfway point. we're looking at page counts from now on.
Holy cow. Whew, chapter 5 is rough. Anyway, so 50 pages. Did you break that out yet? Do you have an ending and start?
No. You mean what the sentence is?
I mean, yeah, what's the ending?
I mean, sentence? I guess I can see. Oh, no, it's perfect. It ends, read through chapter 6.
Through it?
Oh, that takes us to page 200.
All right. Okay.
So, yeah, Spanyo Dungway. And thanks again to Patreon supporters, patreon.com/372pages. Thanks to Matt, who sent in the fan art. Janelle claims the Llamacorn is named Ogden. I'm not too sure that I'm a fan of that. But, join us on Patreon. Join us in Discord. All the places.
What if you meet a guy, or maybe someone in your family marries Magus Ogden?
Well,
you're in hell.
Yeah, I will.
And he's a person who demands that you say his full name because he's doctor.
Well,
Dr. Magus Ogden.
I mean, at this point in time, someone gets married. That's, it'll be my niece. That's probably not happening for 27 years. So, by that time, I'll have a good run, and I will kill him. I will kill him rather than have to say his name, and I'll go to jail, and, that will happen.
All right. Well, yeah, thank you, everyone, and we'll be back 50 pages from now. Oh, God. This is 372 pages. We'll never get back.
Bye.
just failed.
Oh dear. We're gonna cut this.
Yeah. Yeah. Hang on. I'll leave part of it in, and then we'll be laughing at it when it comes back. All right. Hang on. All right. Sorry. That's a first.
Wow. I was worried you'd had the big one or something. Going down, grabbing at your microphone as you fall to the.
Right.